The following Dharma talk was given by Shimyo Simon Atkinson. Reverend Atkinson, Shimyo Sensei, is an ordained priest in the Soto Zen Buddhist tradition. She received Dharma transmission in 2015 from Reverend Teja Munich at the Great Tree Zen Women's Temple in North Carolina. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. Thank you for listening.
Good morning. Here we are again. And let's see what happens. Yesterday, I had the impression or delusion that I was talking about ease. And I think that was my intention. But I think what I mostly did was talk about what ease wasn't. And also, because my mind is not as organized as I would like it to be. Oh, too bad. Let me just start from where I started. I'm not going to go through all that I talked about. Everybody's like, yay. But let me start where I started. And then what I started with yesterday was a short excerpt by Shundo Aoyama Roshi called Water and Ice. I'm just going to read that through again for those of you who weren't here. Water and ice are the same material, but ice is solid. If water freezes in a cup, you cannot put the resulting ice into another container. If you try to force it, both the cup and the ice will break. But water can be poured into any cup. It can fit into even the tiniest spaces. Water does no damage to the container. If you use water to wash the floor, water will become dirty in order to make the floor clean. If you are like ice, you make other beings turn into ice. Ice freezes flowers and fish. However, if you are like water, the fish live, humans swim, boats sail through. Now I realize this is not a perfect image of what we're talking about. I know that ice flows, and I know that the life flows under the ice, even though we can't see it. But this isn't a scientific talk here. I love nature and all those nature shows and everything, but this is a picture that she's drawing to talk about how sometimes we are frozen and we are solid and we don't let life flow through us. Yeah. And that when we flow, when water, like water, things that are unclear, you know, when you wash the floor, you know, you have to get that water a little dirty. It's going to pick up the things that are unclear. When we do zazen, when we apply our real Dharma selves to anything, we have to pick up some of that baggage and to let it float away, you know. And that isn't a bad thing, because that's what a bodhisattva does. Clears away the delusion. And when we are clear and free, little fishies flow right through. Life flows right through. I picked that up, and that reminded me, I don't know whether that was her intention, but the picture made me think of Genjo Koan, fish swim, birds fly. And that's the Dharma, and that's life. So that's where I was yesterday. And the ease that I wanted to express in that, you know, we get clogged up with our own ice, and we freeze, and we can't let anything through because the hardness and the frozenness that our body minds make to keep the fear out, but it's not, because that's fear itself, to keep ourselves safe, which is not, you know, keeping ourselves safe. It's destroying, not self, it's destroying our true heart. It's destroying our true body mind. It's distorting our Dharma lives. And that's not ease. See, I keep talking about the what's not ease. But the true ease is to allow that to happen. And many times, for many of us here, especially the returners, always coming back, we feel that somewhere in Zazen, even when the Zazen is not so comfortable and you're coughing your brains out. Even then, you know, you get a little glimpse of it. And all you need is a little glimpse to know the true self, the true bodhisattva that is here, even though it doesn't feel like that all day long. But we know. And the practice here and everywhere is to cultivate that, keep bringing it up, keep seeing it, not chasing it. There's nothing to chase. Like the fishies under the frozen water, they're always there. They never left. The true mind, the bodhisattva, is always somewhere under here. And that's kind of faith, but yeah. So, finally got my punchline. Okay, finally got to it. You know. So ease is letting the creek flow, and it's really releasing one's true nature from the prison of that frozen cup. It's true ease. So what's joy? Ease and joy, kind of the same thing. The reason I say ease and joy, where ease and joy comes up for me, is and we used to use a translation of the Fukan Zazengi. And the Fukan Zazengi, which I'm sure all of you know here, but just in case you don't, are Dogen's instructions on Zazen, and one of the first things he ever wrote. No, it's not. I'm sure he wrote other things, but it's one of the first things that he presented as a teaching in all of the vast stuff that he wrote. And it was presented to lay people. I'm not going to go all into that story because I don't remember half of it, but that's the definition of what it is. Instructions for Zazen. In it, he says, the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, and the old translation that we used to use is simply the Dharma gate of ease and joy. And then somebody put in some fancy words, but not really. Simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the manifestation of ultimate reality. Traps and snares can never reach it, or plastic cups. Once its heart is grasped, you are like the dragon when it gains the water, like the tiger when it enters the mountain. Once its heart is grasped, you are like the dragon when it gains the water. I don't know why I said that. Like the tiger when it enters the mountain. I've been saying the Fukan Zazengi because Tejo's been hitting us over the head with it for all this time. One of the first things, you know, I can remember that we really talked about when I started practice with her. Sometimes it's my favorite. Sometimes I've said it so much. I'm like, and like the dragon when it gains the water, you know. But sometimes that's what this practice is. Taking it in until you're absolutely bored with it, until it's so every day. And then sitting there one night, saying it for the 1,000th time, and having it hit you in the face again. That's practice. I like this because it's simply the Dharma gate. Not the ta-da, oh, I got something, I'm in. It's simply the Dharma gate, you know, that you've been sitting at all this time. He's very, you know, Dogen's poetry is very engaging for me. And so sometimes I'm not sure I truly know the meaning of it, but I know how it makes me feel. I'm not a scholar. I say that all the time. Don't want to be. In this sense, I don't want to be. I want to truly absorb it. And sometimes I think it's good that I don't know how to just spit it back out. You know, I can at least chew on it a little bit and get my own juices into that. And that's kind of what has been my teacher's lesson. She told me, you know, don't need Dogen to try to understand it. Put the dictionary away, you know. Just take it in. Don't worry about understanding it. And for someone like me, for other people, you know, who are really into the, you know, who really have the brain for it, not me, that's one way of approaching it. But this has been a, you know, frustrating, but also juicy way for me to take that in and accept Dogen and not, you know, keep dropping it because I don't understand it or get frustrated with it. Once it's hard as grass, you're like the dragon when it gains the water, like the tiger when it enters the mountain. The tiger and dragon image for me is very, it's talking about, or feels for me like the tiger and the dragon are that, those beings are not worried about a self. They are in their natural element, so there's no baggage to carry. The tiger enters the mountain and is the mountain. Enters the mountain. Doesn't climb up the mountain. Doesn't scale the mountain. Doesn't hunt in the mountain. The tiger enters the mountain. The dragon gains the water, flows into the water. Is the water, is the ocean, is the river, the mountain and the river. And, you know, it's not like, what it's calling to me is that I'm meant to take the dragon and the tiger as an aspiration. That's what Zazen is, an aspiration to find one's Buddha nature, to try find, you know, the power and the elegance and the grace and trueness of the tiger and the dragon. Not so that I can be great, not so that I can be powerful, because I can be just what it is. You know, maybe dragons are real or not. That's not the point. I'm real. The reality is that to take on the Dharma and to really truly live in the Dharma is to gain the water and enter the mountain. Okay, I'm talking in images here. I don't know. I'm not as good at poetry as Dogen. And I'm interpreting his own. The Buddha said that all beings have the capacity to move beyond our delusion and our suffering, our disappointment, our fear, and to manifest as bodhisattvas in this moment, in this world. Not some future, but right here, right now. To do that and to realize that, to move with that truth in the world is joy. Now, what's joy, you know, what's joy really feel like, you know? Joy, I don't think, is our something that we want to feel all the time, you know. We want to feel happy. We want to feel comfortable. We want to know that we're right. We want to have, you know, control in the world. We want things to turn out the way we want, and that's joy in a very limited sense. Like this limited body that, you know, moves through the world. It's very limited. It doesn't feel everything is, you know, Cheryl kind of told us yesterday, think of all the ways you can be in the world and what you're really leading with, what's really you're paying attention to. And we're mostly paying attention to everything that comes into our eyes. We forget, you know, what's my shoulder experiencing here? You know, because you don't think of your shoulder as sensing or experiencing anything. You know, sometimes some people are very good at it. I'm not. You know, even walking with your feet. Do I really feel the ground? I don't really feel anything with my feet. They're just functional things until I step on a nail and something's wrong. But there are all kinds of sensations that are going on with our feet that we ignore because our eyes and our ears and our tongue, you know, give us so much immediate feeling. And that's kind of like how I'm not going to say we, I experience joy. What is joy? Joy is not just pleasure. Joy, how do I explain it? In my own experience, joy is those days when I go to bed and everything didn't go right that day. Everything didn't go my way. I didn't get the prize. I probably didn't have what I wanted for dinner. Whatever. But when I lay down my head, excuse me, I lay it down knowing that maybe imperfectly, I give right effort. Sometimes I'm not even really sure about that. But it was right effort made. Not all the precepts were kept exactly, but I tried. And maybe being not proud of it, but giving my best to follow the Dharma, whatever the result was. That's easy to know It's not easy to do. This, the practice for a layperson is so hard. That's why I say practice in the monastery is relatively easy. And I kind of experienced that in the monastery, because it's clear what my intent is in the monastery. Sometimes it's not so, well put it, it might not be a good intent, but I can definitely see it, because there's nothing else to distract me from that, you know, what my life is in the monastery. You know, I'm here to take care of other people. Did I do that? I'm here to express and share the Dharma. Did I do that? Maybe I didn't, but effort was made. In the world out there, we do that too, but it's all mixed up with a paycheck and status and all those things. Excuse me. Did I get through my talk without, you know, whooping cough? I don't know. Some things are just not to be helped. But, out in the world, in the monastery, we have a cohort that is on the same page, or maybe a page behind, I don't know, that are clearly working on the same things. In the world, not so clear. People have other agendas, and it's hard to practice when people are so, have their differences in their path. But there's joy there too, and you can find it. And it doesn't look like I said, it doesn't look like the prize. It didn't look like you won. It just looks like, or it feels like, putting your heart out there. And sometimes it's going to get hurt, but with the intention of doing the Bodhisattva's work. That doesn't sound, you know, great, you know. It just sounds hard, and it is. Because this is the Bodhisattva's job. But we have to do it with joy. And you may not see yourself as a joyful Bodhisattva, but the fact that you're sitting in this room with the intent, with the understanding, or however limited, of the precepts and the and the Dharma itself, you can take some joy in that. You're on a path, and we're not completely lost. Don't turn around. Don't stray. Just enjoy the walk. Because some of it will be painful. That's not the point. Because some of it will be disappointing, and it didn't exactly go through the zoo instead of, you know, the parking lot. Neither here nor there. Keep walking. So, sometimes we don't feel the joy. And sometimes I don't look like a Bodhisattva when I look in the mirror. I don't think I'm supposed to. Don't know what that makeup looks like, but. And I don't know, I'm kind of rambling around this because I kind of had to rearrange some of my talk this morning. So excuse me. But I also wanted to say, it doesn't mean that we don't know what a bodhisattva looks like, and we don't know what joy looks like. Because very often, even though I don't feel like a tiger or a dragon, I know what one looks like because they're all around me. I was trying to think how to express that. They're all around me, and they're always teaching me, and they're always there for me to aspire to emulate. So sorry. To guide me. And when I think of in my mind what a bodhisattva looks like, what a true bodhisattva looks like, what a true lion, what a true lion, what a true dragon, what a true tiger looks like, the ones who inspire me. Of course you go back because it's so, you know, so close to teachers. I think when I think true dragon, there was a teacher in my life when I was in junior high school. Her name was Mrs. Schilling, and she was an English teacher. And she was an English teacher in this crappy school with the windows boarded up and the crazy neighborhood. Not enough books, kids sitting on a radiator, you know, because there weren't enough seats. And you could sit on the radiator because there wasn't no heat. And some of these kids had lives that showed up in the way they acted at school. It's not that they couldn't learn or wouldn't learn, but their lives were so crazy. There's, you know, the kids that they say that you can't do anything with them. In my class, she had myself. I was a kid in the back with, you know, used to have the blue balls with the rubber band, and it's always hanging off my head because I think I always touch my head a lot. So I look crazy. You know, here's a, you know, solution to that. No pulling on the hair. So, and she had a couple little boys who were just a riot, you know, just a riot. And this woman had the nerve to try to seek Shakespeare to 12-year-olds in this situation. And she gave us these copies of Julius Caesar. You can't get a 20-year-old to read Julius Caesar. They'll say, I don't understand it. Why is it in this crazy language? It's so dry. You know, I want to go watch The $6 Million Man. You know, I don't want to read this silly book. But what she did is that, you know, we did like a desk reading, like a play. And the two kids that you couldn't do nothing with, she gave them the lead parts. I don't want to say their names because, you know, well, y'all wouldn't know them anyway. Marquez was Julius Caesar. His buddy Charles was Brutus, you know, and there was a bunch of other kids, and we were all sitting, and we all sat at our desk, and we did, you know, like a reading. And by the time we finished that book, you know, some of us had made, you know, cardboard, you know, knives, and, you know, somebody's got a sheet around them, and it was so much fun. So the 20-year-olds who say they don't understand the language of Shakespeare, yeah, you need to go back to school then. Because if Marquez and me could hold on to it and get a hold of it and enjoy it and know what it meant, you know, that's beside the point. I'm just saying. And she brought us a little joy in something that most people thought were irrelevant to us. I'll tell you, I saw a news article a long time ago. Marquez was running for some kind of office in Brooklyn. I did what I did. So I'm not running for office or nothing, but, you know, did something. That's a dragon. I knew I was going to do this. Excuse me. But y'all don't know who I'm talking about. But she just brings me joy to talk about her. And I think, I like to think, that such a person with the frustrations of her job slept well. Excuse me, between trying to breathe and trying to cry. Don't know what to do. Lately, when I talk about Dharma, even though I have this, you know, agenda that I'm going to talk about, these little notes, it brings tears. It brings tears because I get to share this. It's been happening since COVID. Maybe it's not, you know, I'm not attributing it to something real, but that's what it feels like to me. So now I'm going to really boohoo, because I want to talk to you about the tiger. My teacher is named Tejo Munich. She's not famous. She doesn't have a big place. She has been, I think she was ordained, I keep forgetting the date. I get it mixed up with his death. But somewhere between 1978 and 1980, by Dainin Katagiri Roshi. I'd say some of these names because they're so familiar to me, and I assume people know who I'm talking about. That's how closed and cloistered I've been. But she is one of his 12 disciples. And she doesn't write books. She doesn't do a lot of extensive travel, but she loves her practice. And whatever else she's like or does, practice is foremost, and practice is very strong. And I'm not going to tell you a whole bunch of stories about her because I could. But I'll tell you about one night, a long time ago, when I was a layperson, and we were practicing in this place called Southern Dharma. And at Southern Dharma, the teacher's cabin is way up on the hill. You know, there's a kind of zendo. They call it a zendo. It looks very different than here, and they use it in different ways. But she had to, you know, go up the mountain on these little crooked wooden stairs up to this cabin, way up in the dark. And she didn't even have a flashlight because Teja was forgetful. Because that's just part of her personality. And she had to go up these stairs. And you see the, you know, I bought her something. We were talking about something before she went up there. And I didn't have a flashlight either, so, you know, take that as well. She had to go up these stairs, and she's, you know, and it goes up into the woods. And part of the light from the zendo shone part the way up the hill. And as she left, she started walking up those stairs, and her robes kind of moving as she walked. And I just watched her go up and up. She has very pale skin. So it shone in the light of the zendo. And she climbed up, and I watched her go. Until at very last, you know, her ankle was all that showed, all I could see. And she disappeared. And something in my heart said, follow. Follow her. Didn't make sense for me to go up there. And so I did. I kind of climbed up there because I'm kind of clumsy. You've seen me walk around here. I wasn't any better, you know, 20 years ago. And still couldn't see her. She turned around and she said, out of the dark, do you need something? I don't think she said, do you need something? But that was the point. What do you want? And I said, I couldn't say anything. I said, oh, I was just, you know, making sure you had a, I couldn't do anything if she fell or anything. You know, what am I saying? I'm just making sure you're okay, getting up there. She said, yeah, I'm fine. Out of the dark, she says, yeah, I'm fine. And I knew she was. But, you know, after my little lie of, I'm just coming to see how you are. What I really said was, I need to follow you. Well, a few years later, and following in the, you know, the sense of being her student, you know, you meet the tiger. And the tiger has claws and teeth and fuzzy fur. And the tiger is forceful. And the tiger is strong and powerful. And you're going to learn something from the tiger, no matter how it hurts. And there's such joy in being with a real teacher. The teacher for you, not for everybody, you know, but for you. The tiger is fierce. The tiger is kind. The tiger watches you like a hawk. No, like a tiger, excuse me. The tiger watches you like a tiger. And the tiger pushes you forward, sometimes off a cliff, and drags you back. And there's a joy in meeting the teaching that you need.
So, I know all of you know some tigers and dragons. And that's the joy. And it's not has your name on it. It's not a check with your name on it. It's the joy of meeting those beasts. And some of you, Teja will never describe herself as a tiger. She might actually get mad. I don't know. If she knew what I meant. Didn't know what I meant. But yeah. She doesn't see herself as fierce. I don't know how she sees herself, truly. And I'm sure that she has the same doubts and fears as all of us. But I know for a fact she sleeps well. Go knock on the door, Tejo. She wakes up when she needs to. She gets up when she needs to. And just like these everyday tigers and dragons, there's a bunch of them, y'all, in here. You know it when you sleep well. You know it when you get up from your cushion and your legs have been aching and that ache disappears. You don't even remember it by the time you get to the end of the row. That's the tiger and the dragon. That's the joy of this practice. It's not a party. But you have to recognize it. Just how you recognize the spring water flowing when it flows. This is very hard for me to articulate. I'm articulating in pictures that may not reach some of you. May mean something different to some of you. Can't help that. But I hope you see it. I hope that even if you don't notice the elegance, the power, the joy that you move within the world, in yourself, that you keep practicing, you keep going, because it's not for your eyes. It's in somebody else's eyes, maybe, that sees it. But take a look at the other parts, you know. Don't grasp for it, but learn from this practice. Emulate it. I hate to say pretend, because there's no such thing as pretend, but do as best you can every day. And set aside the disappointment. Set aside it didn't work. Set aside that practice. That tech, set a cup. That baggage and practice. Ease and joy is just this. It's this moment. See with more than your eyes. See with your whole self, melted and flowing, like the water, like the fish going through, because we are all of that. And that's the joy. And I hope you understood some of what I was saying. through the coughing and the tears and whatever. Her probably needs to see a therapist or something, because I don't know where this comes from, but it always ends in tears. Not tears of, you know, not unhappy tears. There's some joy just sitting here, rambling around. So it's been a joy being here with you all. And again, thank you for your kind patience with all the coughing. And thank you to those of you who helped by bringing me tea and Flonase and all those things that I truly appreciate. And my silly crying that happens. And it's been had a good time, had a joyful time. And hopefully next time I can enjoy the outside a little bit more. So I don't know if I've run over time again, because I tend to do that. But if there's anybody who'd like to say something, like to make a comment, ask a question, argue with me, I don't know what time I'm at. Anyone?
We're good. We just want to say thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I'm good too, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.